Project Independence is the Aging in Place initiative of the Town of North Hempstead. Some of the many services we offer include nursing and social work services. Call 311 or 869-6311 to get more information or receive services.
And welcome back to Project Independence and You here at WCWP.org, Senior Talk Radio. So we're halfway through our segment with Jim Kane, who is an FDNY retired deputy chief. And we've been learning a lot about what it really takes to be on this kind of journey, starting out as a young, fireman, and kind of as your career grows and you join these incredible teams and management and teach and travel. And, here you are today, retired, but it sounds very strange that you're retired from all the things that you continue to do by teaching and all that. And, I'm personally always curious when, for families, the family of the firemen, the policemen, and how they, cope with worry and concern and that kind of thing. And I also know Otto had a question for you.
About when his teenage bride that he married.
Yes, when they were.
No. What I read, teenagers. Actually, there's some pretty good stuff about Jim online. And this article shows that he married his high school sweetheart, basically. And that's good to know, too,
Yeah.
Because I see the back of Patty's head there all the time, too.
You do. Right. Okay. She has more hair. So
I was curious about something early, going back a step here, about this Navajo Mountain experience. Was that actually like a reservation for Navajo Indian people, American Indians?
Yes, it is. That's where the Navajo Nation still lives. And
so basically
the chief lives. And
so you were on their reservation, basically.
Yes. Mm-hmm. One side of their mountain was on fire, and they needed help. They brought the team in, and I was fortunate enough to be able to go. And the chief met with us every single day. I was on that fire. I was on the Sipay River fire, which was another Indian reservation. I've been on three or four different Indian reservations, and their priorities as to what should be saved are probably a little different than ours, because to them the most sacred thing are their graveyards and stuff, and they're very concerned that the fires never reach those, as opposed to we would worry about our infrastructure more than that. But you work with that, with the people that you're hired by, so you follow what their requests are. That was one of my that was probably my second or third deployment, so I was really impressed with, first of all, the beauty of the country there was amazing. It took us, I don't even remember which airport I flew into, but then we had to drive for 9 hours to get there.
I'm curious about with the Navajo, what's the population like? How many?
I'd be lying if I told you. I don't remember. That was, like I said, that was back in 2005, 2006 that was. I would be guessing, Rebecca, and I really wouldn't want to do
that. Fair enough.
So,
I would say, like most of us, me much included, have no idea. You kind of overlook the fact that these reservations exist,
mm-hmm.
and right. The fact that you were on them and in a different way than anybody would be, really, you get to see a lot of things that most of us have no idea. They're living a life there. That's their world. That's where they live.
Yeah. I actually got my first helicopter ride there also, because as part of the team, as part of my learning process, the operations chief, along with the chief's son and the pilot, the four of us were in a helicopter developing the plan as to how they were going to attack the fire and how they were going to keep it from reaching, like I said, the burial grounds and everything. So, that was really, really an interesting conversation to listen to.
How does that work? Like, who reaches out to get support from, like, FDNY? Is it through some federal channel? Or
yes. There are they call them communication center. There's four different communication center: one in the Northeast, one in the South, and one in the West, and one in the Southwest. All requests go through FEMA, go through them, and then they funnel them down to get an FDNY guy. It goes to the one they just actually moved to Maine. Maine contacts Albany contacts the city Department of Emergency Services, and Department of Emergency Services contacts the fire department. So it's a very convoluted process. However, as soon as the request is going in, they actually contact us directly also to let us know that it's coming, so that we can facilitate it going both ways, get it to happen a little quicker. The old workaround.
Interesting.
Wow. We haven't really...
Go ahead, Otto.
Yeah, I was going to say, we haven't really touched on any local stuff.
Right, exactly. That's what I was just going to say. We're Project Independence, and we do serve seniors. So I know that you have a whole plan of information to provide for, safety preparedness and that kind of those kinds of things for our seniors. And one of the things you wrote down, and I'm just going to ask this question and we can all just think about it for a quick second, is where do most fires start in a house? So, I mean, the first thing that would come to my mind would definitely be the kitchen, because that's where you have all your stuff, your stove, your, microwave, your fridge, you're plugging in, you're unplugging the toaster. What about you, Otto?
Well, I have a friend who actually had a fire in his house, which was a short and a television electronic device. And I know Dan joked, I probably have, my son is also, by the way, Jim, was a volunteer in Company 1 in Manhasset Lakeville.
Okay.
He was a captain there for 25 years.
Wow.
And he moved to Pennsylvania. So that was kind of the end of that. But as a result of that and the friend's fire, I have probably five fire extinguishers in my house.
All right.
One down in the basement near the heating system. And I have one in my office because I got all kinds of electronic stuff, and in the kitchen. I think it can start in a lot of places, especially if you have people who tend to do stupid things like smoke or,
Right. Well, I'm thinking more like for your smokers, that's a different kind of story, I would think. But in the house itself, like, what room is the most kind of, I want to say, where most fires start? So I guess, Jim, you'll have to answer that question now.
So, Rebecca, you are correct. The most fires that occur in a home are in the kitchen. And like you say, the number one reason is for cooking, is due to cooking. And the number one reason is walking away while you're cooking.
Mm.
It's pretty amazing how fast a grease fire can start, and how even more amazing how fast it can spread. And I caution everybody, and I agree with the fire extinguishers, and that's further down in my report if we ever even got to it. You should have a fire extinguisher, but you should use it at the small incipient part of the fire. And if you don't control it right away, get out and let us handle it, because you can't be replaced. The house can be replaced. So yes, the kitchen is number one. Otto, in response to you, faulty wiring is actually number three, the third leading cause of fires in a home. You said it was a TV. Some ways to know if you have faulty wiring is if your lights start to dim every once in a while, if you have problems running more than one piece of equipment at a time. Actually, a pretty easy way to know if the wiring is old or should be looked at is if you look at your outlets and you only have two prongs instead of a grounded outlet there, instead of having the three holes there, that means your house is pretty old and the wiring is probably just as old as the house. And there's more of a chance of things happening with that. I'm not saying that it can, if well-maintained, it's fine. I do know my house is almost 85 years old. Half of it has been rewired, but the other half is still the old wiring. My son who lives next door, his house is almost 80 years old. And every time we look at the electric there, I shake my head and go, man, we got to do something about this, because just to even replace an outlet there is a real tough thing, because there's not enough wiring in it. It's different type of wiring and stuff like that. But what people should know is that 27% of fires occur in the home. That means the other 73 occur at work or somewhere else. And but from 2014 to 2018, 77% of the deaths from fire occurred in the home. Now, in the last year and a half, because they only have stats through last June, 82% of the fire deaths occurred in the home. So where you are and where you're living, that's where the majority of people who have a fire are dying from. Now, 20 years ago, smoking was the leading cause. And one of you mentioned smoking. Smoking is the number five cause of fires in a home right now. However, smoking is still the leading cause of fire deaths. And that's simply because people falling asleep while smoking their cigarettes right in their chair or in their bed and not putting it out. And so that's still, like I said, 20 years later, after all the campaigning and everything, it's probably more than 20 years. It's still the leading cause of fire in the home. So the one that you missed, number two, was heating equipment. And heating equipment includes fireplaces, wood stoves, space heaters, your oil burner. Maintenance on all that, and some of that on the space heaters, it's the wiring also. It's usually the wiring that gives on the space heater, or the space heater is too close to your furniture or your curtains or your drapes or something like that. So those are the five leading causes, four of the five. The one that's number four that really, it shocked me when I was looking at this, and it goes kitchen fires, kitchen, heating equipment, faulty wiring, then an intentional fire, meaning somebody intentionally did something to set the house on fire, and smoking. Those are the five leading causes of fires in the home. So
intentional is aware of that information, right? People, you got to be careful with that kitchen, the grease fires. And you know what other, I experienced not too long ago, which I couldn't believe, was a toaster oven.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That, I mean, you know, I think my son put something in there and forgot about it. And which, you know, I've done too. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, you have it going, you even hear the timer going, but you just don't, it's just such a normal sound. Yeah. And all of a sudden I'm just smelling, I'm thinking, is my neighbor, you know, is the fireplace outside, what's going on? And I'm just thinking, and then I'm smelling it again. And like, I was literally sitting right beside my kitchen, and then I looked and I saw flames coming out of the toaster oven, and I pulled the plug and got it out, and then I threw it out, of course, but that scared me.
Yeah. It's amazing.
That scared me a lot.
It's amazing how fast it happens. And that's what people don't realize. And that's why I say that with cooking, the number one cause is when you walk away. You shouldn't, I do it myself. Like I said before, I'm retired. My wife's not. So I do a fair amount of cooking while she's at work. And I have a bad habit. I run into the other room to get something, come back. But it's a hard habit to break. But it's something that you should really work hard against, because that is the number one cause of kitchen fires, is walking away while you're cooking.
Right, well, we have to take a short break again, but when we come back, I do want to talk about it and maybe some suggestions you have, you know, for seniors, because seniors that are, you know, take a little bit longer to walk around or whatever situation they might be in. So we will be right back with Jim Kane and Project Independent.